From the only production company to bring high-powered, five-star caliber, sold-out poetry shows to the world-famous Houston Improv comes an original event that takes the art of spoken word to new heights. On Sunday, October 16th, Soul Caritas, Soul Poetry, and Lucy Pearl Suites will premiere Pastries and Poetry, Spoken Word Under the Stars. Word to the wise, get your tickets today. VIP tickets are already selling thanks to local fans. General and VIP seats are still available. To secure your tickets, visit www.soulcaritas.com. Post Houston is located at 401 Franklin Street, Houston, Texas, 77201. All Soul Carita shows begin on time. Early arrival is highly recommended. Lucy Pearls presents Pastries and Poetry, Spoken Word Under the Stars, is presented by Soul Caritas, Soul Poetry, and Lucy Pearls Suites.
Daddy Houston.
You are now listening to the Life is Not Complicated, You Are podcast. Here's your host, veteran, best-selling author, philanthropist, and youth advocate, Carlos Wallace.
Hello, my good people. Welcome to the Life is Not Complicated, You Are podcast. And I'm your host, Carlos Wallace, for those that don't know me. This is Season 7, Division or Delusion, let's be clear. I know it's been a while, but I've just been taking my time. I want to make sure I have a good topic, some good topics to come back with. And I got some really special guests. My first one, hey man, this dude here is phenomenal. I can't wait for y'all to hear his story and he shared everything, man. So introduce yourself, brother.
What's up, man? This is my name is Blake Moss. I'm a friend, more like family member of Carlos's now as time has progressed, and somebody I have a lot of respect for in the entrepreneurial space, and I'm excited to be on the podcast.
My man. So let everybody know what you do. I mean, I know, but brag on yourself, man. It's okay.
I'm at the beginning. This is the introduction. If I were to have a book in my career, this is the introductory part. But I'm starting a career as a baseball agent representing baseball players. Right now, mostly doing that sort of through the draft. And as time progresses, I'll get more advanced and represent, professional MLB players, negotiate their contracts, try and help them land marketing deals, and overall just help them make good decisions with their career, but more importantly, their life. So looking to weave myself into that fabric and, have a positive impact on these guys.
I'm glad you said life, because we're going to touch on that a little bit. But first, I want to know what made you want to jump into that space? I know you previously you were in a different professional career capacity. So what made you want to change up?
Man, so I started my career out of college in the oil and gas industry. I'm born and raised in Houston. So I kind of saw that the influence that the oil and gas industry had, in this region of the country, specifically in Houston being the energy capital of the world, I felt like oil and gas guys got to do whatever they want, whenever they want to do it sort of thing. And, a lot of bells and whistles come with that job. So right. I worked as a landman for about 3 years, but it was never really for me. Like I said, I liked the things that came with it, but I didn't like the day-to-day of the job.
Gotcha.
So I kind of had to take a long look in the mirror and think about who am I, what are the things that I enjoy doing in my free time, and how can I kind of parlay all that into a career? And, baseball has always been my first love. I picked up a ball, probably when I was 4 years old, and it was really the only sport that I kind of committed to in my entire life. I played year-round all the way through high school, had opportunities to kind of play in college, and forwent that for different reasons. But, even when I wasn't playing and I wasn't around the game every day in college, it was still something that, I followed, and I kept in touch with, my peers and who were still playing or in the industry. And so I really wasn't that far removed from it. So I decided to kind of give it a run, went back to school, got a master's in sports management from SMU, and kind of been working in the agent business since. So, it's been a good experience. I'm learning a lot each and every day and taking it day by day, and, seeing myself evolve over the short term has been pretty cool. So I'm excited to see, what's ahead of me.
I just listened to you, man, talk about baseball, and growing up, I'm a little bit older than you, but growing up when I was, my younger years, everybody played baseball.
Right.
Because it was free.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Basketball came with a cost, and it, you know, subsidized a little bit by sponsorship. Soccer was very expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, I think when I was a kid, basketball.
By design, by the way.
Yeah. You know, I think basketball was $5 to register and play, and soccer was like $50, you know.
Really?
We're talking about in the 70s, you know, late 70s, early 80s. So for your mom to commit $50 for you to play a sport, you better play.
Right.
But baseball, ironically, was free. You know, the uniforms, each team was sponsored by local stores.
Okay.
Like, I played for Discount City, which was a store kind of like, it was like Walmart before Walmart.
Gotcha.
And so Discount City paid for all our uniforms, bats, baseballs, you know, you name it, right? And, you know, one team was fire department, so they were sponsored totally by the firemen of our town. You know, the police department, same story. And, but for some reason, I think baseball is kind of going away from that model, right? And it just seems to not be as many black kids playing baseball. Why would you say that? You know, what was the reason?
It's a lot of different reasons, and I think you're kind of hitting on, I think, maybe the epicenter of it. I think as time has progressed, people, you know, just like in any other industry, have found ways to make money doing that.
Right.
They realize if they can provide a premium service that people will pay for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially people who can afford it, you know, they don't think twice about it. So over the course of time, you've seen that there have been different leagues or organizations that say, we will give your kids better exposure if you play on this circuit.
Wow.
And you pay a premium fee, and you know, you play with better competition and all those kind of things. And over time, it'll benefit your child more so than just him playing on the street, right?
Mm.
So that's kind of what happened. And you see the effects of it, you know, over time. Even in Major League Baseball, if you look from like 75 to the early 90s, black players accounted for roughly 20% of Major League Baseball players.
Right.
Today, in 2020, that number was 7.5%, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, black players accounted for 7.5%. Of players on an opening day roster.
American black.
Black Americans, right.
Yeah.
Right. So there's
some people say, well, it's a lot of black. No. They're Venezuela, you know, Puerto Rico.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think the MLB is roughly 40% players of color.
Mm-hmm.
And 20% of that makeup is players of Latin descent.
Gotcha.
So, and then, you know, black Americans represent 7.5%, and then you have an Asian population, you know, that kind of fluctuates over the course of time, and there's different reasons for that. But I think you know, the other part of it is you know, black players, we're just not exposed to the game as time has gone on. And I kind of hit on that, and I'm circling back now, but all these groups have come in, decided that they wanted to suburbanize the sport in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, baseball is not now it has become an expensive sport. One guy had a wooden bat, and you know, you guys toss gloves around or whatever, you made it work. Well, that's not the case anymore. Everybody needs their own cleats. Everybody has their own bat. You travel with your own helmet, you know, all this kind of stuff. You know, the tournament fees are out of this world. If you want to compete in front of college coaches, you have to pay, you have to play in the right places. So, you know, to get there, you have to travel expenses, and it, you know,
that's
not everybody
crazy.
Can afford that. Whereas, and then the other part of it is, because we're not seeing that 20% on TV, you know, black players at a young age,
it's not attractive to
them. Yeah,
it's
not attractive to them. So yeah. I grew up playing in an all-black little league.
Right.
I played with the same group of about 15 kids, probably from since I was 8 years old all the way up till middle of high school. And everywhere we went, we were the black travel team, and everybody knew who we were. But I didn't realize it when I was a kid, but Our dads, who are our coaches, a group of like three of us, and my father included, they were instilling who I am today in me.
Right.
And I didn't see it. But so whenever, you know, we were going to these tournaments in these all white neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
they would tell us, like, you know, things are a little different for you guys. You got to be on your best behavior. But, you know, at the same time, we're going in there, we're trying to kick ass. We're trying to compete.
Yeah,
you know?
So I'm sure it made you play
we're
a little harder.
We're trying to make some noise, you know?
Yeah.
So, but people recognized us. We had louder uniforms than the other teams. But that's who we were, you know?
Yeah.
But that, all of that has been instilled in me now. And so, you know, I'm just looking forward to the opportunity to take who I am and use that passion of, you know, wanting to be a black face in baseball,
yeah,
but really kind of guiding somebody who needs that guidance in their career, you know? So, yeah.
It sounds like they kind of privatized it. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
Like healthcare, right?
For sure.
So when you privatize it or, you know, create this elite segue, it's going to leave somebody behind.
Yeah.
And sadly, it ends up being more people of color, but mainly people that just can't afford it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And then when you have people of color that can't afford it, mm-hmm. if it's not attractive, mm-hmm. well, that lessens it even more, right?
Right. And so to kind of to stop that trend, and, you know, Major League Baseball has recognized that there's an issue.
Yeah.
So they do have, you know, their RBI initiative, which is reviving baseball in inner cities. And they have different youth programs that try and get, you know, an influx of black baseball participants. And it looks to be, excuse me, it looks to be like it is working, because in the past, I think if you count if you look at the MLB draft in the first round from 2012 to currently,
mm-hmm.
we are back up to that 20% black players are being taken in the first round, which is pretty good.
Good, yeah.
First round picks are going to get a good chance to get looked at and have all the opportunity in the world to play at the show. So,
right.
There's a lot of different moving parts, and I think another part of that influx in the first round of the draft is the black community has kind of caught up to where they've tried to privatize it, meaning they took the baseball out to the suburbs, but guess what? Now we're in
the
suburbs.
Now we're moving to the suburbs.
Exactly,
right, yeah.
You know, so that could be another reason for it. So there's a lot of different moving parts, and I don't think it's just one reason, but I think that the economics part is probably the biggest
Definitely
influence
the biggest.
In that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
You talk about when we were kids, man, we had 9 gloves. So right. when you were outfield, we traded gloves with each other.
Right.
And 2 bats. You had a little bat and a big bat. That's it. You know what I mean?
And then when you got 3 outs, you left your glove out there in the position.
It swapped it out. That's right.
It.
Yeah. Yep. And the opposing team used the same glove.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But we didn't have, I mean, I see the kids now, they have sliding gloves, man. We didn't. You may be lucky enough to have a batting glove.
Now, the
Maybe.
Kids now, they got the elbow guard, wrist guard, the shin guard.
Yeah.
You know, they got the arm sleeves. You got to come correct now.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, and we played fast pitch in the neighborhood without a helmet. You know what I mean? A lot of us, I'm sure we suffered concussions and everything else, man. But it was just a part of the game, you know. But I'm glad to hear that there is at least a plan, you know, to try to make it fair,
right?
If you will.
Right.
And I'm glad to hear you say, as a professional, that you see the difference right away, you know, because, again, you know, we can't fix it in one day,
but
we need to start somewhere.
Right.
You know, wise man
right.
said the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. Next best time is right now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So in 20 years from now, we'll have a tree.
Yeah.
So it's good to see.
We should.
Yeah. I'm glad to see that happening. Would you say, like, I've heard a couple of interviews about this, and some say, well, the NFL has an easier path, you know, to the league and the NBA, so to speak. Do you think that has a lot to do with it? The kids are we're not patient anymore. We want to get there right now.
Well, yeah, that and man, that's a very fair point, because if you look at somebody like Kyler Murray, who, you know, obviously he's a starting quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals, and he was a first-round draft pick by the Oakland A's.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his signing bonus was somewhere in the $5 million range, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the way it works for guys who are just drafted is I have that signing bonus for $5 million. And he's an outlier, because the majority of people don't sign for anywhere even in the same breath as you know, 6-7
wow.
figures. You know, most of the guys, they're lucky if they get $100,000
wow.
in the draft. You know, that's the majority now. So Kyler Murray, who's a top prospect, you know, signs for roughly $5, $6 million, whatever the number was back then. He had an opportunity to take that out of college or enter the NFL draft and play his cards there and see what happened. Now, the thing is, he could take that $5 million from the Oakland A's, but there's still no guarantee that he ever plays a single inning of Major League Baseball. He's
right.
got to make it through all these different levels, you know, low A, rookie ball, low A, high A, double A, triple A.
Now, with the $5 million, how long do they own his rights?
Minor league contracts are like 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I own you for 7 years for $5
million. Correct.
Jeez.
And like I said, so at the end of that 7-year term, you know, you're a free agent, so it all kind of depends on what do you look like as a prospect now as compared to when we took you?
Right.
So, you know, maybe another team picks you up, or within those 7 years they trade you. You know, a number of different things could happen. You can get picked up in the Rule 5 draft, and that gets kind of complicated. But for him, it was, I take this $5 million and I try and scrap my way through all these levels to get to play minor league, to get to play Major League Baseball, and then make league minimum, which at that point was probably, you know, right now is $700,000.
Mm-hmm.
That would be his salary at the major league level. But, or I can take, I don't know what a signing bonus was in the NFL. Let's say it was $30 million, mm-hmm. right? I get to have an impact immediately. I'll be the starting quarterback day one.
Right.
You know, I become more popular. I get more endorsement deals this way. So, what do you want to do? Do you want to play baseball and maybe have a chance of playing Major League Baseball? Or do I go to the NFL right now and have an immediate impact and jumpstart my career more or less?
Right.
So, you know, and for him it's worked out because a couple of weeks ago he signed that big deal. I can't remember. Deal. I don't know what the number was.
Yeah, he got a monster deal.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes, kind of the same thing, right?
All right. His dad's a Major League Baseball player.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Major League pitcher. And so he was a pitching prospect out of high school, and he was taken out of high school in the Major League draft. But – same sort of thing. You know, I think he was, at that time, the draft was 40 rounds, and he was somewhere in the 30-round range. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's fighting the uphill battle that way versus, let me just go to Texas Tech, play football, see how that works out. And, you know, it's worked out for him as well, too. So can't be mad at that.
So even though the lifespan of a baseball player obviously is much longer, but the startup is much harder.
It's tough, man. It's tough. No guarantee you ever play Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How would you say unions have impacted major sports, baseball specific?
The MLB, man, I think you just see it in the offseason. You know, their union, they know that they're fighting an uphill battle with these owners because of the way that the system works, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Major League Baseball, once you break into the major leagues, the team has your rights for an additional 6 years, regardless of the contract you signed at the draft.
Is that right?
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
So say I got called up today to play Major League Baseball. They have my rights for 6 years. The first 3 years of that contract, they get to unilaterally decide what my salary is. No matter how good or bad of a player I am, I'm more likely going to get league minimum or right around it.
For 6 years?
For 3 years.
For three, okay.
Now, the last 3 years of that six-year term, they have the arbitration system, which means at the end of every season – I get to have a say in what my salary is. I think my salary should be this, okay? Well, the team thinks my salary should be that. If we don't come to an agreement at a certain point in time, then we take it to arbitration, and you sit in front of a bunch of arbitrators, and you present your case on why you think your salary should be this. The team presents their case, and they decide. The arbitrators then decide what the salary is.
Okay.
So that system works for the major league owners because they don't have to pay guys.
Mm-hmm.
They get to pay all-stars sometimes. You know, Kyle Tucker is a great example. I think he's right around league minimum, you know. He's an all-star.
Wow.
But they're not paying him like it. They don't have to.
Right.
You know, so that's the biggest battle that the union is facing at the end of every at the expiration of every, you know, collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're fighting an uphill battle. But unions, you know, they're really important. Because they have to make sure that progress is always being made, no matter what.
Yeah.
Anytime there's a free agent negotiation, you know, you have to work with the union before you accept any deals. You know,
mm-hmm.
they kind of are gonna hold your hand and make sure that you're doing the right thing for your player, but you're also doing the right thing for, you know, the sum
collective
of all the players,
right.
The collective, right?
Well, you know, I was a union man. Well, I wouldn't say was. I am. I was a union officer for 24 years.
You still involved
in union? Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't know that.
Till I die, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we use arbitrators also in the rail industry for a different reason.
Okay.
Mostly disciplinary reasons, right?
Gotcha.
When a guy's pulled out of service for whatever reason, and then we have a process that we go through, kind of like a court process, but it's within the company. And so I was the guy that represented, the engineers in that process. And so
you are now listening to the Life Is Not Complicated, You Are podcast.
Union Pacific will levy the discipline, and we would appeal it to an arbitrator, say, mm-hmm. hey, this was too much or, you know, excessive and so forth.
They use it for disciplinary reasons as well, too.
Okay, mm-hmm. cool. But I always wondered that about why did you guys have to go to arbitration when it came to pay and salary? Now I understand. Because with us, it's a totally different thing. Like we have a collective bargaining every 4 years also.
Okay.
And when we don't come to terms, we get assigned a PEB, a public Presidential Emergency Review Board, and he'll assign a judge, and we go there and argue, and then they'll come to a panel, and they'll decide what our contract is. And the union nor the company wants that, because now you have people deciding what should be in a contract that has no idea what railroading is about.
And it's setting a dangerous precedent if it goes the wrong way for a particular group.
Very dangerous, very dangerous. So, fortunately, in my career, we never saw that, you know.
Gotcha.
But we came close a couple of times, but we never saw it. And I was very glad. Now, the railroad, because of unions, we have great retirement, man. It's amazing pension. You're looking at it. You know, I'm on it right now. How would you say the baseball retirement compares to other major sports, football and basketball specifically?
I can't speak for the other sports. I'm not too familiar with their retirement system. But I know in Major League Baseball, the goal, obviously, you want to win a bunch of games. You want to be a you want to have this accolade and this trophy on your shelf and all that stuff. That's not the goal. The real goal is 10 years in the big leagues. Because if you get 10 years of service in Major League Baseball, you get an incredible retirement. It's I want to say if you wait to start collecting when you're 60 or 65, I don't really know the specifics, but I want to say you're walking away with like $200,000 a year.
Yeah.
Something crazy. You know, it's a great plan. So that's something that, you know, we look for in players. Whenever I meet a player, one of the questions that I ask them is, what is your goal, you know, in baseball? And I leave it very open-ended. And a lot of the kids, they're 18 sometimes, the kids you're talking to, you know, so they don't really have any sort of, you know, they're not, that's not anything they're thinking about. I want to be
Golden Glove, home run derby.
But sometimes you run across a kid who says, I want to play for like 15 years in the league. Yeah. And that's the correct answer.
Yeah.
Because you can only have so much control on what team you're playing for, what situation you're in. Do you even have a chance to compete? You know, a lot of players don't ever have a chance to compete for anything, you know, that fans would consider relevant.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, if you can play 15 years in the big leagues, that means you've made a good amount of money throughout your career, but you're going to retire with a little something in your pocket, too.
Right.
And you're going to be able to provide for your family for a really long time.
So
that's the goal.
And that, and nothing beats that consistent money.
Right.
You know, that big nest egg is cool.
Right.
But when you start chipping away at it,
that comes and goes. I've seen it. I know people, you know, who played professional baseball for a long time, and then, you know, they probably got close to 10 years of service.
Yeah.
But before they even got to the chance to, you know, they're not even close to their 60 range, but their money's all gone. They're living day to day just like a normal person would. But you play 10 years in the show, you should have something to show for it.
A lot
of times,
man,
they don't.
All they're talking about is yesterday.
Right.
And what they used to have, right? Yeah, that's crazy. Because, you know, people look at baseball or professional athletes, period, and just think, you know, I call it the trick-or-treat candy synopsis, right? When you go trick-or-treating, you have this big old pillowcase full of candy. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, you're thinking, there is no way this is going to ever run out, ever, until your knuckles start scraping the bottom of the pillowcase, you know. So, you know, when you're looking at all that money, you're like, oh, man, I'm set. Until your accountant calls you up and say, hey, we need to cut back.
Right.
You know, we just got hit with taxes from 3 years ago or whatever, you know what I mean? Now, I do want to ask, as an agent, what's going through a player's mind specifically? I'm going to give you an example. We had a guy here in Houston, Carlos Beltran, years ago. And I thought he was a hell of a player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he kind of peaked while he was here. And the end of his contract, he had an offer to go to the Mets or stay in Houston.
Right.
And the money offered there was a little bit more. But when you account for taxes, the money Houston was offering him really came out about the same. And, of course, the cost of living here is much cheaper and so forth and so on. What's in a player's mind when you're looking at that, you know, because I thought he had a pretty comfortable spot here, right?
Yeah.
But he chose New York.
They had a chance to go to the World Series that year. We got him at the trade deadline, if I recall. I was a kid.
Yeah,
so I think
yeah.
we got him at the trade deadline. We went on a playoff run. He went crazy.
Yeah.
And then he took that Mets deal.
Yeah, and then kind of fell off.
But you're saying from a life perspective.
Yeah, like why would he not take the you know, I know they say, oh man, New York's a bigger market, but a person that lived in New York myself,
yeah,
if you play for the Mets, it's really not a bigger market for you. You know what I mean?
Man, I think, you know, it's a case-by-case basis. One thing that I've learned in this business is that nothing is – it's hard to blanket anything because you're dealing with people, and people have feelings, and they might lean a certain direction for one reason or another. But I think that's part of the agent's job is we sit down and we have these difficult conversations. But not only do we have the conversation, my job is to break this down for you, you know, and educate you on anything that, you know, anything that we think that could be thrown your way or anything that you need to consider. We break it down for you so that, you know, you and your family and your decision makers in your camp, we, you know, you come to the best decision when it's time, you know, and maybe sometimes that is kind of making you aware of some hesitations that might be present, or maybe sometimes it's, you know, man, there's a lot of good things going this direction. You know, we should like I said, from we look at the worst possible scenario and we look at the best possible scenario. We break them all down and everything in between, and then, you know, that's how you make a decision. But I think that's what you have agents for.
Right.
You're starting to see players, you know, move away from having agents like Lamar Jackson right now is representing himself. And, you know, I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing, but, man, sometimes it's hard to see the entire picture when you're standing in the frame.
Absolutely.
You know, so maybe would this deal have gotten done by now, or will it get done? Who knows? But I think, you know, it's hard to kind of get a full look at exactly what's going on when you're standing in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's what makes agents important.
And it's also – I'm gonna go on record saying it's a bad thing, you know,
to represent yourself.
Yeah. And the reason I say that is, you know, I'm a firm believer in I let the people do what they do it.
Let the experts handle, you know, whatever their subject is.
Because when you go in there, you're discussing more than just what I'm gonna make a year. Like, there's a lot of things that's in contracts that the general public has no idea. You know, I remember Kirby Puckett was negotiating his deal years ago.
He represented himself?
No, absolutely not. And he, one of the things he wanted in his contract specifically is that he had his own room on the road. And
that
here
was
I was thinking,
back then.
And I was thinking, man, I thought they all had their own room. You know what I mean? Like, and even though some people may not think that is a big deal, it's a lot of small things in contracts just like that, you know, that's very important. And as a player, I would want to focus more on just being the best on the field.
Right.
And trust that my agent's going to get the best deal for me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, and then another thing in baseball specifically, and circling back to that arbitration, if you do go to arbitration and you sit in front of those arbitrators, the team is literally telling you this is why we don't want to pay you what you think. This is what we think about you, right?
Yeah.
And the players sit in on those meetings now.
Yeah.
So after that's all said and done, a lot of times there's animosity.
Of course.
I just have to sit in this meeting room and hear you say what you don't like about me and why you don't think I'm worth XYZ.
Right.
So I feel this way, and I'm going to remember this come free agency, right?
Of course.
But imagine if you're doing that, you know, on your own without any representation, you know, it's a dangerous kind of game to play.
Getting a little emotional. I just think it sets a bad precedent. And I just really never believe that I could get the best deal for me when I pay you to do that. Right. Now, we just saw the NFL have to back pay players for concussions and, you know, set up like a medical pension, so to speak, for retired players, or, you know, injuries that may come about later. You know, does baseball have something similar, or once you're gone, you're gone?
No, I'm not really aware of what that situation looks like for players post-career, but I think, you know, agents come in there as well. The medical thing is really important.
Yeah.
You know, we got to, for example, Fernando Tatis, this past week, he got suspended for 80 games. He had a ringworm.
Yeah.
And apparently his story is they used, you know, some medicine to get rid of the ringworm, and it had a banned substance, according to the MLB. But there's a system in place. Anything that a player ingests, if you want to make sure that you're good to take it, you send it in to the Players Association, take a picture of the label, and they'll let you know whether or not it's good or bad.
Right.
Let you know, right? So all that kind of stuff can get, you know, you can avoid any situation like that. Now he's out 80 games to pay, you know.
Yeah.
So
when they 80 games suspended, that's he loses the 80 games of pay as well, right?
Yep.
And he can appeal it, right?
He can, but I don't know where that stands, actually. But, yeah, he can appeal it.
but slim. Yeah, no,
they don't play around with the drug stuff. Yeah, you know, they had that issue and they don't want to go back.
And it's not like back in the day where it's just steroids or nothing. It's so many different things now.
Right. It could be, you know, substances that supplements that you take after you work out or anything. You know, it's a lot of different things. Yeah.
Man, one last thing I want to talk about, and we'll wrap up, man. Going back to the salaries, you know, professional athletes. Now, I did a little research on this. It said 78% of NFL players file bankruptcy within 5 years, and about 60% of the NBA players. Now, Major League Baseball.
Wait, repeat that statistic again.
78% of NFL players and 60% of NBA players file bankruptcy within 5 years of retirement. Now, baseball is not as high, mm-hmm. but still four times higher than the general public. Why do you think that is, and what are you going to do to maybe curve some of that?
Yeah, man. A lot of it is, like I stated, you know, players early in their career, they're making right at league minimum, right?
Yeah.
$700,000 this year. That's what league minimum is in Major League Baseball. And that $700,000, those checks, they look good when you're 23, 24, and you're getting them, you know, and you get paid during the season. It stops when you're not in season. So you play for 3 years, right? Which is, that's right around the average career for a Major League Baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 3 times 700, let's say you made $2.1 million. You're retired at 27, you know. Okay, now what? That money goes fast.
Yeah, that's
you know?
Not
and
a lot. Yeah.
It's hard. Once your spending habits, once you start making more money, you start spending more money, right? And then once you kind of have those spending habits in place, now it's kind of hard to take that back. You know, I'm used to going where I want to go when I want to go, or buying this vehicle or buying a house. I'm used to doing that stuff. Now it's how do I pull the reins on that?
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, you know, overall, my job is to just offer perspective, you know, and try and get them to understand, or maybe, you know, another good thing about the industry is once you get to know people and players, you know, a lot of players, they want to help out other players. So, man, let me introduce you to so-and-so who's kind of been through this or had experience with this. And, man, he can probably talk to him because, you know, just like I think with anybody, you know, you get tired of hearing the same voices telling you, you know, how you should think, or probably giving you advice. So if you hear it from somebody who maybe was in your shoes, you might get a different perspective.
Right? Gotcha. Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I can't speak for other agents. I would like to think that as my career moves forward and guys are no longer playing, that I still do what I can for them. But I think, you know, a lot of times, you know, you see who really cares and who doesn't, because, you know, once a player's retired, there's not really much they can do for you anymore. So, you know, I think a lot of agents just kind of move on. But, you know, I'd like to think that I'd be the kind of guy to, you know, do what I can for guys even when they're no longer, you know, a client,
right,
you know, on a day-to-day basis. So I kind of pride myself in being a good decision maker in some of these things. And, you know, hopefully that'll continue. I'll continue to evolve and move in that direction. And so I like to offer, you know, all of my knowledge, and hopefully I'll have a lot of expertise under my belt when that time comes. And but yeah, just kind of, you know, being there for guys when they need me or when they don't, you know, and hopefully, you know, creating real relationships that'll you know, outlast any sort of career. You know? So
now we talk about that minimum being $700,000, but just for clarity, let the people know that's not, the player don't go home with
$700,000.
You got union dues, taxes, and of course your agent, and you know, things like that. So you don't go home with the 700.
Not even close.
Yeah, maybe half if you're lucky, right?
Yeah, it also depends on where you're playing.
Right, right.
So factors in too.
Now, when a player does retire from baseball, and they go on to a broadcasting career, things like that, you still represent them throughout
you
that
can,
as well.
You can.
Right?
A lot of guys do. It's a little different industry, but a lot of guys, agents have had success in doing both.
Okay.
So, you know, hopefully that's something that I can learn throughout my career. You know, I got a little ways to go before I get to that point. But I think it's something that I would like to be exposed to and learn about. But, you know, they kind of go hand in hand. So, you know, we'll see. But yes, a lot of agents do end up representing. I wouldn't say a lot. There are agents out there who represent players in their post-career matters, yeah, and entertainment or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's cool, man. Mm-hmm. Hey, brother, I just want to say thank you, man, for coming on today, sharing your knowledge. Anything you want to say or tell them where they can find you?
No, man, I appreciate you having me. Like I told you, this is my first podcast appearance.
So. You handle it like a pro.
But I don't like hearing my own voice, so I don't know. When I circle back to listen to this thing, it's going to be weird for me, but we'll see. Yeah,
you handle it like a pro, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for listening to the Life is Not Complicated, You Are podcast. For more information about Carlos, please visit www.carloswallace.com. From the only production company to bring high-powered, five-star caliber, sold-out poetry shows to the world-famous Houston Improv comes an original event that takes the art of spoken word to new heights. On Sunday, October 16th, Soul Caritas, Soul Poetry, and Lucy Pearl Suites will premiere Pastries and Poetry, Spoken Word Under the Stars. Word to the wise, get your tickets today. VIP tickets are already selling thanks to local fans. General and VIP seats are still available. To secure your tickets, visit www.soulcaritas.com. Post Houston is located at 401 Franklin Street, Houston, Texas, 77201. All Soul Carita shows begin on time. Early arrival is highly recommended. Lucy Pearls presents Pastries and Poetry. Spoken Word Under the Stars is presented by Soul Caritas, Soul Poetry, and Lucy Pearls Suites.